When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
This crowd rises to its feet. Vaccaro slammed it home. Darwin left wing. Three ball. Perfect. Darwin went to the lane. Locked. The Mobley pow. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim. Pow with the left hand and a foul.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Chase Down is presented by Fubo TV. Watch over 100 channels of live sports and TV for half the cost of cable. There's no contract and no commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com. The good times keep on rolling. The Cavs go undefeated on their four-game homestand, taking care of business against the Portland Trailblazers. Shout out to Winnipeg Legends BTO. Joining me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, man. The vibes are, again, immaculate. If you ask Darius Garland, they never weren't immaculate. What a high low of a season, you know. 8 games in a row won, 5 games in a row lost, and now 4 games in a row won again. And maybe it's the optimist in me, but I'm starting to think that the winning side is much more the nature of this team than that lost 5 in a row. So just yet another double digit win. I thought this was one of their most complete wins of the year. Start to finish. Blazers got, you know, within 5 a couple times, making natural runs. But, like, I felt like the Cavs were in control of that game start to finish and really, you know, exerted their will.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it was a real quality win. And you know what, Carter? Right now, it's Thanksgiving. It's American Thanksgiving. It's the time to spend with friends and family. And honestly, let's bring in someone that I consider to be both friend of the podcast, Jeff Nomina. Nom, how you doing, buddy?
I am doing great. The vibes are immaculate. I need that on a shirt. I don't know how Cleveland of all cities has not put that on a shirt yet, but I need the vibes are immaculate shirt more than I need anything in the entire world right now.
That might be one of the biggest upsets, because the Cleveland shirt market is
the Cleveland t-shirt economy. Come on. Like, we'll get there.
You can't have a press conference without a shirt coming out of it. Like, they're just cranking them out. And then this one, you know, it's been hanging out there for a while. It's low hanging fruit here.
One of your best observations in some time.
It is a really great point, but you know what? I agree with Carter's sentiment. Like, I thought that was a really good win. We said on Monday's podcast that Portland isn't a team that's going to just hand you a win. That's an above average defense. And without Dame, let's be honest, they have more better defensive players on the court when he's out of the lineup. Obviously, they're a better team with Dame. No one's suggesting that they're not. But that's a team that hung around with the Milwaukee Bucks in Milwaukee with Jrue Holiday back recently. They don't go away easy. And, you know, I thought the Cavs did a really good job of, you know, absorbing all of those runs. And every time Portland starts to make a little bit of a push and Simon's getting hot late in the game, they just respond time after time. And I was just really impressed with the overall team effort in this win.
Yeah, I just think that, I mean, you go back to Jarrett just setting the tone. Like, you know, I talked on the last pod about how I feel like, you know, the kind of the identity of the team is Towers. Maybe it's just Jarrett Allen. Maybe this sweet, soft-spoken man. It just is the beating heart of the Cleveland Cavaliers, because at this point, man, like, he is just so rock solid, dependable, never plays outside of himself. Really anchored the defense tonight. I think he deterred so many shots. I thought he was a killer on the boards and just as a finisher, my goodness. So, like, I think it all starts with Jarrett and, like, you know, his general selflessness. I mean, like, just him mic'd up was the cutest thing I've heard in some time. He's just like, I don't know what you guys want me to say.
I'm surprised he played as well as he did. He was, like, so self-conscious about what he was saying. I'm surprised it, like, didn't get in his head that he was thinking about it the whole time.
Yeah.
So I completely agree. Like, I was actually having a conversation prior to this podcast with one of my buddies, and we were just kind of talking about how underappreciated Jared Allen is and how easy it is to kind of overlook him. Because let's be honest, like, Garland and Mitchell, it's probably the best backcourt in the NBA. Once again, they have a massive night combined between the two of them. Evan Mobley obviously is so exciting, and he's kind of that guy that we're monitoring his progress. He's still so young, but you just keep seeing all these flashes. But then there's just Jared Allen, who probably has an argument to be a top five center in the NBA right now. Like, it gets a little tricky with exactly kind of how you define a center. Like, Pascal Siakam plays center, and Anthony Davis doesn't play center, but Anthony Davis is probably more of a true center than Pascal Siakam is. So I don't know exactly how you want to do the math on that. But after, like, Embiid and Jokic out of kind of your true centers, I don't know how many guys have more of an impact on Jared Allen does. And I think that's so easy to kind of just overlook as a Cavs fan, because there's so many flashy things around. And I mean, my argument ended up looking a whole lot better. And this is one of those, I promise you listeners, I'm not going full LeBron here. I'm not saying, yeah, Kobe was going for 70 or anything like that. But, you know, like, this was a dominant game for Jared Allen. Namdi, do you feel like he sometimes gets a little overlooked when we talk about this team?
Oh, for sure. He seems like the guy that when we're missing, the bottom can fall out much more than anyone else. Well, last year, Darius, but now with Mitchell here, you know, even when Darius was out for a few games, we could sort of cover that. But when Allen's gone, it feels like we can't cover for that nearly as well. Like, that really changes the entire identity. If the team, you know, if you had to really identify what that identity is, it seems like it's Allen. You need him there to really set the tone on both ends. And when he's not there, I think you feel it more than just about any other player. And he's also added so much. Like, his passing has gotten enough better. His touch around the rim has gotten enough better where it's not maybe a flashy. He's not doing a ton of it and, like, putting up a ton of stats, but it's so functional that he isn't taking anything off the floor, and he's getting just a little bit better all the time. He's incredible. He's one of my, like, he might be my, like, the guy I get most excited when he has a big game.
Oh yeah. I think you're right in saying, you know, functional enough, like, the high-low passes from him, sometimes they aren't gorgeous. Sometimes the touch is a little heavy-handed. Sometimes he doesn't place the ball perfectly. And, you know, like, but, like, all he has to do is make the right choice and, you know, get it close. Because, like, oftentimes he's dealing with such an advantage. He's often, when he's in that short role, he's playing 4-on-3. So even if it's not a perfect pass, one, he's got some elite margin for error when he finds Evan Mobley on a duck-in coming from the dunker spot. And he's got two really, really great shooters to kick it out to as well. So, yeah, I mean, he's just, you're right, Jeff. I think you kind of said it best when you said that the bottom tends to fall out a little bit more often when Jarrett's not out there. And I mean, in no greater way than the bottom literally falling out of their entire season last year. Yeah. When he was missed that significant stretch of time. And, like, I don't know, I feel like he is, you know, obviously there's going to be a lot of talk about, you know, the vocal culture setters for this Cavs team. You know, Serena Winters reported on Lamar challenging Donovan on defense during the game, and I thought that was a great report from Serena, talking about how, you know, Lamar is willing to get in Donovan's face, you know, even though Donovan's a star. But I think Jarrett is in a lot of ways just as important for the culture. Like, this is one of the team's, you know, higher paid players that just does not demand anything. And you know, I feel like with bigs like this, you know, with that soft spoken bigs, you kind of wonder, like, is the passion there? Not with Jarrett. Like, he clearly loves basketball. He works hard every game. He just kind of goes about his business. And I think that is such a great example to set for the rest of this team.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I thought it was interesting in the broadcast. There was an interview or a little clip with Allen, and basically talking about him recognizing how much more he needs to talk defensively, right? Like, that was something that we had asked him at media day last year, was, oh, like, how do you kind of process things as the quarterback of the defense, as a center? And he's like, I just kind of let, like, my play do the talking. I'm not that much of a vocal guy. That's changing. Like, you can see him talking out there. And what stands out to me when you kind of evaluate kind of the centers across the league is, for the most part, there's usually some sort of glaring hole in their game, right? Like, there's something that they really take off the table. And Allen's done such a good job of rounding out his game. Like you mentioned, the short roll passing, I think, has really improved. You look at it this year, his free throw percentage is up to 80%, 14 points, 11 rebounds. Like, he kind of does a little bit of everything. And he's so unique defensively as well, right? Like, he's someone that can come up and defend at the level on the pick and roll. I would have liked to see a little bit more of that in the fourth quarter when Ann Simons got going. I thought they played just a little too much drop in those spots. But just how unique both he and Mobley are on the defensive end really kind of makes things interesting what they can do in tandem. And Nam, you brought this up before the podcast, but, and I just checked it, Evan Mobley still leading the league in 3-point contests, which is just, it's absurd. Like, this is just such a unique big man pairing.
And Allen doesn't get played off the floor in the way that a lot of, you know, fives can, yeah, especially if they're not at that, like, Jokic Embiid level. And I mean, he's right behind that, but he finds a way to stay out there and be impactful against almost any matchup and really, you know, impose himself on it, which is really nice too. We don't have to change our style a ton to accommodate for anything, which is huge as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think that we're just seeing it more and more. Like, these guys aren't, you know, like, if you, there's just more and more data to show that this front court's going to work, at the highest level of the game. And like, in it, and if there is are spacing concerns, I do think they're, you know, the elite shooting of the backcourt, you know, like, Justin, I, you know, kind of scoffed when you made your Splash Brothers comparison. And I still do a little bit, but one thing that I do think is really important is both those dudes are just absolutely lacing the net as off-ball spot up guys.
Yeah.
And when you have players who are devastating off-ball shooters, you can accommodate for a lack of space. The Warriors can play Iggy, Draymond, and a center, you know, during their peak run, even though, you know, maybe one and a half of those guys could be counted on to hit a three on any given night, because you have so much gravity with your off-ball players. And I really think that you know, as much credit as we give Jarrett and Evan for being kind of the tide that raises all boats defensively, you know, I'm starting to think that the Darius Donnie backcourt is kind of the tide that raises all boats offensively, where it's like, it's almost hard to have a crappy offensive lineup if they're both out there, because their gravity, even when they're playing with guys who aren't great spacers, like, if those spacers are screening for them off ball, then they got to come out and guard.
Yeah. And honestly, like, one of the things you do, because we're now approaching a quarter of the season, one of the things you look at is, okay, where are the areas for positive and negative regression, right? Like, where is this going to shake out? And I think it's really interesting to me that right now the Garland and Mitchell pairing, the O rating that they have together is worse than the team's overall offensive rating. The defensive rating with Allen and Mitchell, or Allen and Mobley together, that defensive rating isn't as good as their overall defensive rating. To me, that indicates that there is still some kind of positive regression on both of those ends, that this team can keep getting better. And I mean, when you're talking about that for the team that, as we're recording, has the number one net rating in the NBA, that's pretty exciting. Now, I still think there are going to be rough patches. I think we might be heading into one when you look at these next four games even. But that's part of the growing process. But you can tell, like, they're starting to figure things out. And honestly, like, a lot of the mistakes they're making out there, like a lot of the turnovers, I'm like, you know what? I'm happy that we're trying that, right? Like you're kind of forcing passes in. Mobley threw kind of an errant pass, a headman pass to Garland in transition to try to push the pace. DG will force things in the paint, and especially if it's a dead ball turnover, I'm going to live with those a lot of the time, because a dead ball turnover is, in a lot of cases, a better outcome than a missed field goal, because missed field goal, they can go out and run in transition. Dead ball, you can at least
spinning,
get back.
My friend.
What's that?
You are spinning, my friend.
I might have had a little bit of caffeine. I felt I was a little too tired the last podcast, so I had just a little bit of caffeine here. But, you know, I just feel
so
like...
So much caffeine that you're saying, actually, turnovers are good.
I'm saying...
We got to get you on Washington, D.C., brother.
There are good and bad turnovers, Carter, and some of these I find to be productive, okay?
I know.
And they haven't played that much together. You know, this is still a very new, you know, lineup with Mitchell in there, with the injuries we've already gone through and the ones we had in preseason as well. Like, they're still
in a
very
limited
much...
amount of time for the starting lineup writ large, even relative to the season thus far, you know, like... Mm-hmm. Lamar's played, I think, now four games as a starter. You know, Dean started a few games. Isaac mm-hmm. started a few games. Karras started a few games. Like, we still don't have a ton of lineup data to make sense of things. And as Justin has noted off air, the starting mm-hmm. lineup with Lamar still isn't doing that well. So like there is so much more room for growth for this team.
Way to take my segue.
I was trying to tee you up. Jeez.
Yeah, but you gave away the whole secret. That's what I was going to say, is that the interesting thing is that the starting lineup still isn't clicking. Like, it really is interesting. Tonight, starting lineup had a 119 D rating, negative 6.1 overall. On the year,
did not match my eye test, by the way. I thought they played pretty well.
I honestly thought that against Portland, and that wasn't the case. They had a negative net rating, and the defense would have been worse in the league. Once again, that occurred tonight. And overall, Garland, Mitchell, Lamar, Mobley, and Allen has a 117 defensive rating on the year and a negative 5.6 net rating. Like, to me, honestly, like, When I see numbers like that, where it's, oh, that group actually has the worst defensive rating in the league, like, it was pointed out to me, there was a really good observation, I forget who the Twitter user was, but someone in response to Monday's pod mentioned that the three-point shooting luck hasn't been good there. I feel like that lineup is competing well, and honestly, like, what Lamar gives them in terms of energy, I still want him in the rotation. I want him to be part of this team, and I think he brings something to them and ups the intensity level overall. But it's just interesting to me that we still haven't really found an offensive lineup that clicks, and even in this four-game winning streak, to have the starting lineup be that much of a negative and be outscored in all four of these games, to me, that's really, really fascinating.
I would argue it's actually encouraging.
I would too.
And I do think there's slight. I think there's a legitimate difference between the last four games and maybe the first, let's say 8 to 10, where mm-hmm. I thought the starting lineup wasn't playing well, and the bench was kind of bailing them out.
Yeah.
In this instance, the starters scored 104 of the team's 114 points. Like these guys are playing well. And I think they're certainly getting enough. You know, they're just, you know, there's certain runs or lineups or, you know, small little sample theater. That's why they say, like, don't worry about a 5-man lineup's numbers till they hit like 200 minutes, because it's just so noisy. And I do think this starting lineup is playing better basketball than the starting. I felt like the bench really needed to come in and save the team early in the year. And I don't really feel that way now, though. Even
numbers
though the
lie,
bench
man.
Didn't,
I'm yeah. You know what? We'll bring them up on the podcast, but numbers lie. Like, when I look at the starting lineup with LeVert in instead of Lamar, the defensive rating is 10 points better, and they're just barely a negative, minus 0.9 net rating. Like, sometimes you just throw them out, and I think it's important to note the small sample. I do kind of expect that Dean Wade might get the start, or at least a look with the starting lineup, just because he can bring so much on defensive end along with the spacing. But I really like having Lamar come in and compete. And to me, when you have a guy that shows you something, that gives you life to a rotation, I think it's just a justification to go a little deeper in your rotation, right? Like early in the year, everyone's coming off the offseason, you're fresh. A lot of teams are playing their starters big minutes, so you play your starters big minutes. But as the season progresses here, there's room for Lamar to come in and really kind of muck things up on the defensive end, get out in transition. I thought he had another great game. Jeff, what's stood out to you about how Lamar's played?
Well, just to your point on being able to go deep, like I love that JB is willing to do that, and he's willing to kind of ride different guys and see who is playing well in any specific game and really ride them out. So I've enjoyed that. I think Lamar just gives you a little bit more than maybe some of the options, and that he's willing. I mean, it goes poorly a lot, but he's willing to try to do some wild stuff out there every now and then and to try to be a little bit more of a nuisance. Sometimes Dean and Isaac and some of those guys just fall too much into trying to just only fulfill their little narrow role. And I think Lamar gets a little bit more creative. It goes poorly sometimes, but it does provide something different than I think some of the other options have, which provides a little bit of
chaos can be good, right?
Right.
Yeah, I always say, like, you know, like if Isaac Okoro historically has not been an event defender, like I think Lamar Stevens is just an event player. He does stuff. You notice him. And to your point, Jeff, like he had a stretch in today's game where he blew up a 3-on-1. He messed up a 3-on-1 fast break and then, got through the ball out of bounds and then turned it over on the following inbound. So like sometimes it's not always great, but I think that kind of chaos is really valuable from a variance perspective. JB only played 8 guys tonight, which surprised me when I looked. You know, obviously Robin played a little bit early in the first half and then was pretty excised. So I'm not counting him just because he was, you know, out, you know, I think 5 minutes or less. I'm saying you weren't a major part of the rotation. I do think I have to just wrap my brain around the fact that the Cavs have 4 all-star level players. And when you have that, it's really hard to get 9-10 guys minutes in the rotation unless one of your 4 stars is either in foul trouble or having a bad game. And I thought Evan, Jarrett, Darius, and Donovan all had really good games tonight. So no wonder they all played 30 to 36 minutes.
Yep, I completely agree. And again, I think sometimes we can get too caught up looking at our own team and we don't look at the other side. Like Ant Simons played 38 minutes. Jeremy Grant played 36 minutes. If the other team is rolling out kind of their best guys that kind of minutes, it's tough to say, well, you know, our philosophy is we just play 32. And even if it costs us a game, we're going to put all our starters on the bench. And you can just kind of roll out the starters. Like you're going to match minutes for minutes at some point. And honestly, I look at it, Mobley 35, Allen and Garland 36, Mitchell 31. Like none of that's outrageous to me. And I think it's to be expected that you have some turnovers in a game like this. We talked about it coming in, 4 games and a 6 game stretch like that, even though it's all at home, that's still tough on the body, right? Like especially when you play 3 games in 4 nights, which both the last 2 games that they've played have been in those situations. And like we said, I think it's been 2 of their best wins in terms of, I think Atlanta was definitely their best win overall on the season. But I think just understanding the situation and the way that they're responding now.
By the way, no, that's not true. They have 2 overtime wins against the Boston Celtics. What are you talking about?
I'm still hyped about those games. Like I still get excited just thinking about them.
I think the Atlanta game was a better win than those. I like what I saw in this game in terms of tendency, the way that they responded to each of these runs. Obviously, the Boston game, I'm putting it over the Portland win.
I'm categorically denying this take.
I'm not fully insane. I have both Boston wins over the Portland win, but I think the Hawks win was their best win of the season because of the fashion that it came in. But yes, obviously they have a lot of quality wins and they've been a really good team at home. And again, I think that this team gets better with each game and even the mistakes they make. I think all are encouraging signs of where they can get to as a unit.
And yeah, they're down 2 guys who play big minutes normally. You know, Karras started most of the season. Love is a major, major part of the team. Dean trying to work his way back. I mean, they're still working around some pretty difficult things to figure out when you're talking about how many minutes guys are playing and how many games they've played recently. So I think that it's been impressive that they've been able to put all that together with so many guys in and out.
That's the fascinating thing. Yeah, sorry, Carter, but that's the fascinating thing to me about kind of the Lamar starting and the starting lineup that we have and the success that they're having. Like, theoretically, Caris LeVert is a sixth man. He's been playing really well for them. Like, a lot of the lineups have been very good with Caris on the court. You look at the on-off splits, they've been very good. That is going to be a major addition when we have him coming in off the bench, so that you always have two ball handlers out there. Dean finally getting back in the lineup. I was so happy to see Dean Wade back on the court. And obviously it's going to take him some time. When you're dealing with a knee infection, you're not exactly working on your cardio the whole time. And anyone that's gone through a round of antibiotics knows that sucks, but there's still like,
how about that baseline take from him?
Oh, that little reverse. Oh, that was,
I
gotta
tell you guys, I know I'm way too deep in like the NBA podcast thing, because today I got Carter's Jackson Hayes bit mixed up with Zach Lowe's Dean Wade bit. And instead I had Dean Wade doing the Jackson Hayes, like, turn around, let me look at you, whatever.
I just want one more look at you.
And now I see Dean Wade doing that, because I've mixed up all my NBA podcast bits.
That's among the deepest and dumbest cuts in the history of Chase Down podcast lore is my Jackson Hayes is the lead in Star Is Born. That was tough to defend at the time, and it's tougher to defend.
You're not happy I'm bringing that back up, are you?
We've taken some hacks, you know, over the years. We'll try a bit every now and then, and some of them work out, some of them don't land. But, you know, I think it's interesting too that they didn't really get much from the bench. Like, it was a bit of a dud overall. Jetty's been really good. Only 3 points on the night. Okoro, 3 points. Dean Wade, 4 points. Jetty, though, still plus 17 in his minutes out there. Like, he's just always doing good stuff. And it's fun to think when Caris is back, when Love is back, hopefully his finger heals up. If you can count on Dean and Lamar, Love, Jetty, hopefully Ricky Rubio, and even Robin Lopez in certain matchups, you start to get pretty far down into the rotation of guys that you feel comfortable playing and guys that you can insert in situationally, depending on who you're playing. Like, Lamar did a great job on Giannis. Like, I think if there is a playoff series against the Bucks, one, that's going to stress me out. But two, I probably want to throw Lamar in and to at least give him a few tough possessions and change up the look of what you can do defensively.
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of flexibility, especially if the team gets healthy. You know, you can play Dean at the four, you can play Lamar at the three or the four. You can go big, you can go small, you can run. You know, I guarantee you they are going to run Ricky, Darius, Donovan lineups. Yeah. I mean, that's like I'll rubber stamp that right now. And I think that this team, down a couple key contributors, is still really figuring it out. And, you know, I can't help but think, like, again, like, I just feel like this team is at like 75 to 80% of its ceiling right now. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not clicking on all cylinders, and they have the best net rating in the league. And it's really, really exciting.
You know, they're not clicking on all cylinders yet, but our partner Zoom certainly is. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. Guys.
Justin, what? Well done.
Felt good being on a live.
I'm sure it felt good to hear live. I want to talk about something, though. Isn't it nice to have just nice, normal Isaac Okoro minutes again? Like,
his defense was awesome.
No stress.
Yeah.
Just, hey, Isaac, can you go shut Anthony Simons' water off for the 20 minutes you're out there? And he did. I thought he played his best defense of the season tonight. I think he has been, you know, you look at the foul rate, and I think he's gotten a rough whistle on some games that has inflated that rougher than in the past. And it's one of those when it rains, it pours type situations earlier in the year for him. But I thought he really just made possessions impossible for Simons to generate a clean look. He got skinny getting through screens. He was physical enough in staying connected without, you know, overcommitting and fouling. And it showed in the numbers. The Blazers in his 20 minutes had a 78 offensive rating.
Oh my God. Like,
just an absolute a beatdown. I think the Cavs were like had a plus 40 net rating in the minutes Isaac played tonight. And like that's our guy. There mm-hmm. you are, Peter, to steal from my favorite gift from Hook that I use every time a lost Cavalier finds their way. Because like it, I never cared about box score stuff with Isaac. I always cared about like
the impact.
Does the team feel better when he's on the floor? And I felt that last year, or despite some quiet box score numbers, and I hadn't felt that for much of this year. And it feels like things are just starting to stabilize and normalize for Isaac. And I'm really happy for him.
Yeah, I'd still like to see both he and Mobley, honestly, be a little more assertive. I think the last two games, I don't know if it's fatigue, but again, just how many games they played in such a short number of days. But I felt like Mobley could have been a little more assertive on the offensive end. And I'd like Isaac to take some pages out of Lamar's book of just kind of the way that he attacks whenever he gets the opportunity. But overall, he's playing such better basketball. And I agree with you. I think this was definitely one of his best defensive games. The other one that jumps out is probably the Knicks one where he shut Brunson's water off. That was very crucial in that fourth quarter. But yeah, he played really, really good basketball. And I'm happy to see. And again, like it's one more kind of feather in their cap or one more option you can go to. If Isaac's giving you positive contributions from an impact standpoint, that makes things a lot easier to give Garland and Mitchell the rest that they need throughout the course of a game.
And you're talking about, you know, matchups. You're saying Lamar was doing well against Giannis. Well, we're going to be playing small guards. We're going to be playing guards that we're going to need to match up with. And the Trey matchup didn't go great the other night. But, you know, there's going to be guys like that where you're going to need Isaac to come in and step in, because Donnie and Darius are great. But, you know, there's going to be times where they need a little bit of help out there.
Yeah. And speaking of Giannis, right around the corner, we're starting off this 3 games in 3 cities and 4 nights trip in Milwaukee. I'm happy that one's on the front end because I'm very interested to see how that game goes. It'll be interesting to see if Caris LeVert is going to be available for that, because, I mean, if this is one of those situations where, you know, let's give him 2 nights off and save him for Milwaukee, that'd be great. But, you know,
is Giannis the most stressful star to play against in the NBA right now?
Like, no, Steph is so stressful. Oh,
both of them in their own way. I think
Gary Trent Jr.
You're so annoying. I don't know when you kind of got us looking towards Friday. I just went, oh, like every Giannis drive, I'm just gonna be stressed because he's just so freaking good.
I don't know if it's just because I have like I don't get that stress for Milwaukee matchups because I kind of feel like
but you don't hate them. That's your problem. You only get stressed when you hate someone.
Right, right. I really
you don't like... hate them. That's your problem. It's an all-time great. You know what's wrong with you? You don't hate them nearly enough.
You're healthy about this one thing.
Yeah, Carter telling me that I don't have enough hate in my heart is something I've very rarely heard. It's
you biggest know, upset and chase
I'm just
down saying, history.
I just think I stumbled on something that Justin only gets worked up when he hates him.
Yeah.
Like if there's no malice. You can be easy breezy about everything.
Like the only thing I really hate
Toronto matchup. So
yeah, the only thing I hate about Milwaukee is that they lost game 3 against Toronto. Like I'm still bitter that Giannis didn't get a single free throw in regulation. Like
You're a broken man.
I am a broken man. But the other thing with Milwaukee is like I just kind of feel like that's a found money game, right? Like if we lose, okay, it's the best team in the league, best player in the league. It's one of those measuring stick games. If we at least put up a good fight, I feel good about it. But, you know, like it's also just a real opportunity. Like if you go out and get a win, like the win over the Bucks last year was their best win of the season. That was an awesome, awesome game. They executed. Milwaukee was fully healthy. Cavs were, that was after the Rubio injury. I think it was a week after the Rubio injury even. And they came away with just such a great win. And I'm interested to see. Now Drew Holiday's back for the Bucks. I don't think Chris Middleton will play, but there's a possibility. But that is just such a good measuring stick game that I'm interested to see what adjustments they make from the last matchup. Obviously, having Jared Allen back helps, but you just played them basically a week ago. Like you're still kind of in that range where you're going to make some adjustments. I expect both teams to make some adjustments to how each other plays.
I think the Cavs should play better I think that would be my number good one note. Adjustment.
Very good note.
I think they're going to come out super hungry, jokes aside. Like, I think that game, it's the only game all season that really got away from this team. Mm-hmm. I guess you could argue the Minnesota game, but, I mean, you lost by 2 points or 4 points, whatever it was. I don't know if that counts as getaway. It's the only double-digit loss of the season. It's the only one that really was like, all right, let's empty the benches and concede on this one. And I hope the Cavs come out a little grumpy about it. Yeah. And especially now that they've kind of gotten right and found themselves. Because I do think there's a lot of things that make this a good matchup for them. They got guys who can beat that drop coverage. They just have to stop Brook Lopez from going absolutely ballistic all game.
I was nervous that Nurkic was going to go full Brook Lopez tonight. When he hit two threes, I'm like, okay, the Bosnian Bears now draining threes on us. What's going on here? That wasn't what I was looking for, but I agree. Like, I think stylistically, it's a really interesting matchup. And in theory, if you've got Lamar, Mobley, Allen, Wade, like all these big bodies to throw out, that's the type of personnel that can contain Giannis to some extent, right? Like, you're never going to fully contain him, but you can make him work. And at least it won't become like the full PJ Tucker LeBron meme of we've got a LeBron stopper. No, you gotta, it's a team effort to even slow Giannis down.
Yeah, it would just be such a like those two Boston wins had us riding so high there for a little while, and you know, then the losing streak came, and I feel like we're kind of building back up now. I feel like that winning that game would kind of set it back onto that trajectory where we're all like, oh man, like, do we need to change even our crazy expectations that we had?
Yeah, I agree. And look in the next four games, travel to Milwaukee, day off, then you travel to Detroit, then you fly to Toronto for the next game, then you're home against Philly two nights later. Like, that's a really tough stretch. That Toronto game is the very definition of a schedule loss. But, you know, the Hawks game was an example of a schedule loss typically, right? Like, you can go out and you can win those games. I think it's really important. Obviously, Milwaukee's going to be a litmus test game, but you got to take care of business against Detroit. You got to do what you did last time you played in Detroit so that you can rest guys for the fourth quarter and give yourself a better chance in Toronto. If you have to really work to earn that, and I know Detroit had a good game tonight against Utah, but if you have to work to earn that and you play your starters their regular minutes, that's going to make that Toronto game a lot harder. So this is one of those navigating an 82-game schedule lessons that we'll see how this young team handles it, because they don't take care of business, it may end up costing them a win or making it tougher for them to win against Toronto. And the Philly game, even though you have that day off, it's still going to be third game in four nights. You're going to be tired. I know they're going to be down Harden, Maxi. Maybe Embiid will be back. But they just beat Brooklyn with Kyrie, KD, and Ben Simmons without Maxi, Harden, and Embiid. There is no easy wins in the NBA. So I think how the Cavs manage this and what level of intensity they bring to each of these matchups is going to be really, really interesting.
Yes, sir. Buddy, it's Thanksgiving. Let's spout off what we're thankful for.
I love that. I love that. Let's go what we're most thankful for. And Jeff, we'll let you go first as a guest.
I am thankful for the depth this year. We've had like Karis drop a 40-point game. We've had big Jetty games. We've had huge Kevin Love games. And you know, on a smaller scale, we've had good Isaac games. You know, Robin Lopez has come in and had good games. Lamar's come in and had good games. Like, the amount of different players who have come in and really stepped up and you know, been the junkyard dog for that night or whatever, you know, title you want to give them. We've had so many different guys step up into that, and it's been awesome to just be able to rely on someone stepping up, not hoping, you know, this guy steps up, but knowing someone out there is gonna step up and lead you. It's been fun.
That's a really great point. Like, it's funny to look back on it now, but the fact that DG missed so many games to start the season, and then I remember even going into that Detroit game, like, a lot of the consensus was, well, Garland and Mitchell are getting the night off. Like, this is probably going to be a loss against Detroit. And Bench Mob comes in and just takes care of business. The bigs dominate Detroit. And it's just the way that guys have stepped up this season. Like, it's kind of crazy. Do you guys feel like the season's going by too quickly? Like, we're already at the one quarter mark. And like, to me, that's when you just have that level of anticipation with every single game, the year just flies by. Like I almost want to like slow things down. I don't know if it's me getting older and all of a sudden my perception of time changes or whatever, but I feel like this season's going by way too quickly. I'm trying to savor it all at this point.
Yeah, it's been, I think you're right. It does feel like it's going fast. And I think it's because every game feels so exciting, you know?
Yeah, it's an event.
Yeah, like, and you know, even when it's not a marquee matchup, it's like something that you're looking forward to all day. And, you know, and I think that kind of transitions into what I'm thankful for is like, I'm just thankful to have a team that's like fun to watch, fun to easy to root for without really any caveats. Like, there's nothing really about this team or about really any individual players on this team that makes me particularly grumpy, you know, like normally, even when things are good, you know, there's something to whine about or complain about or a player who maybe just stylistically isn't your jam.
Yeah.
And I just feel like this team is just so comprised of like good dudes who say the right things, care about the right things. You know, maybe they pander to us a little bit, but I'll take a little pandering every now and again. I will
absolutely take pandering.
I'll eat that up 10 times out of 10.
When someone on the Bombers cares enough to pander, I love it. Like we got Willie Jefferson from Texas talking about how much he loves Winnipeg in the ice cold. And I'm like, you know what? I know you're probably lying. I know that this climate isn't your cup of tea, but I like that you're willing to make me feel good about it. I'm here for that.
Yeah. So the pandering, I'll take all the time. I just like this team. I like the people on this team. As you know, as much as we can get to know them, obviously that we're still at a reasonable distance as fans. But like, you know, we're all rooting for Laundrie in the end, and it's nice to like you know enjoy the people that are, you know, putting it all out there every day. Like just watching that highlight clip of Jared Allen today, mic'd up. I was like, this guy seems like a dude I might want to hang out with, you know, like, like what a cool luxury it is to be good and to be likable.
Yeah.
This isn't a fair analogy, but it reminds me a little bit of like those peak Warriors teams where everyone fits together absolutely perfectly on the court, which is not always how it happens. Right. Like a lot of times you draft or you call it, you know, are able to trade for guys, but they don't fit together perfectly. But they also seem to fit together like perfectly from a personality standpoint. Like I wouldn't say that like Garland and Mobley and Allen and even Mitchell have like the most common personality you expect out of like a super duper star in the NBA. They're all so like just chill, low key guys, and it's crazy that they fit so well on the court and off. And like, it just like the team has like such a personality. You don't always get a team that has a full personality like this. And like they very much have their own kind of thing going on.
Yeah, and especially at a time where like so many teams have tumultuous stuff on and off the court, right? And I'm sure at some point with this group coming together that they're going to have to face some adversity, right? Like there's going to be times where you spent a lot of time together and you get on each other's nerves. Like that's part of any relationship, and that's something you have to work through, just like you have to work through those on the court issues. But you're right. Like it is such a fun blend of personalities, and it's such a likable team. And even the fact that Donovan Mitchell, like he came into this situation and it's so obvious, like the words were, I want to be part of what the Cavs already are, right? Like I want to be part of the culture. It's not my team. I'm here to enhance what they're doing. And for the words to line up to the actions, even as he's having like an all NBA MVP conversation type season to this point, the fact that that's lined up with what he's done on the court, like it's so damn exciting that this is exactly how it's shaken out. Like this is like my absolute dream scenario. And it was funny on the Dunker Spot, they had Zach Lowe on today, which I would encourage everyone to. You should be subscribing and listening to that podcast to begin with, but it was a great episode. But they asked Zach like what his favorite archetype of a player is, and like for me it's always the water bug point guard. Like I love that. And Garland like combines like the scoring outbursts that I loved with Kyrie with ridiculous passing. And then Mobley does things that I really love. And Allen's like the prototypical center that I love. And then Donovan Mitchell, I don't know about you guys, I'm still blown away by half the stuff he does on the court. Like there was a steal where he just kind of one-handed catch and ripped it out of the air, and he does that with the rebounds. The sidestep, the Cavs actually posted a great video of him from the baseline, basically loading up on the left leg, shifting to the right, and then finishing with the little scoop layup.
Like, dude, a little play, sorry to interrupt, that I just freaking loved today was the play where Darius kind of floated the pass over Josh Hart and he backpedaled into an open wing three in the fourth. Like, that was just such a nice high IQ play. Like, I just feel like people don't realize how important, like, those little backpedals are when you're an off-ball player to generate that extra angle or an extra bit of room. Like, that's making something out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And getting a clean, wide open look. And he and Darius both kind of embraced right after that three, because you could tell, like, they're like, oh, we are in sync right now together. And it felt really cool.
There's nothing that gets me more excited at this point than a Garland to Mitchell lob. Like, to me, this isn't groundbreaking analysis, but like, that to me is the most fun thing, where you have these two dynamic guards and they're both putting up absolutely absurd numbers right now. But then you just kind of have that moment where Garland recognizes that Donovan is an athletic freak and just lobs it up there. And I this all kind of ties in pretty well to my thing that I'm most thankful for when it comes to the Cavs, which is just how quickly this has occurred. Like, how quickly we have got to this. Like, I shared a clip with Carter the other day where I was just going through a Twitter search, and I found a video from 2 years ago when we were talking with Sam Vecenie about, like, the prospect of maybe drafting LaMelo Ball if you jump up in the lottery, and how does that work with Garland, Sexton, and Kevin Porter Jr.? Is it going to hurt the development? The fact that we're now at this point where, like, legitimately we have probably the best backcourt in the NBA. You have two ridiculously good big men that fit perfectly together, that this whole team fits together. Like, part of what I've always enjoyed of being a Cavs fan over, like, the last, like, 15 plus years is they've never been boring. Like, even when the team isn't good, they're taking hacks, right? Like, we'll take a chance on Andrew Bynum, take a chance on Luol Deng or Earl Clark or all these things that haven't worked out, and even Andre Drummond and some of the hacks they've taken now. But, like, the fact that there's always just been this desire to, let's figure something out, let's get something going, and now we're at this point so soon after the entire cupboard was emptied to win championships and go to four straight finals with LeBron James, that's unbelievable, and it's really rare in the NBA as well.
When it was fair to worry that, you know, there are a lot of franchises that get lost in the wilderness, especially, you know, I've said it 5 billion times and he'll never hear it because he doesn't listen to the podcast. But David Zavac, I remember, you know, right that first year, he said, you know, the Cavs' biggest task is to accomplish a positive culture that does not include LeBron James. You know, and in so many ways, his gravitational pull made it kind of hard to do that. You know, like, he was such a big personality in both stints that, you know, it's hard to create your own, like, organic culture from scratch. And starting from zero. But I think they finally did that. And, you know, a lot of franchises don't do that. You know, we've seen a lot of teams be in the wilderness for, you know, 8-10 years or like, get good enough to be the 7 seed or a 6 seed and then just, you know, wilt away. And it
like
doesn't
the beam,
feel like,
baby.
Yeah. Oh, geez. it doesn't feel like that's the Cavs' trajectory right now. It feels like they are on the road to legit contention, if it's not this year, in the next couple. And, like, what a nice thing.
Yeah.
Especially when we were drafting, like, fifth every year, you know, the lottery was not being super friendly to us. It started to feel like, oh, this is going to be the new lotto odds felt like they were really daunting every year. No matter how bad you were, you're still going to drop. So, yes, I agree. Like, the fact that we went from where we were 2 years ago to this is, I wouldn't have believed it if you told 2 years ago me that this is where we were.
Like, even just the last year and a half, right? Like, after the Mobley pick, there was still a lot of discourse about, okay, is this the right path? Yeah, you just invested in Jared Allen, and yet you're picking another 7-footer. There were still so many questions. And now that we're at, like, this point of stability where, like, we're obviously going to still learn a lot about this team. There's a lot of growing to do. There's still steps along the path to become a contender. But the fact that you have front office stability, you have stability with the coaching staff, you feel really good about where you're at with Kobe Altman and JB Bickerstaff. You feel really good about the foundation on the court. They still have some flexibility when it comes to cap and things like that. And there's interesting internal options to go along with those four. Like, it's a really fortunate place to be in. And I feel so grateful because honestly, like, I would trade in 15 years of sucking for that run that we had with LeBron. And the fact that 4 years after, we're in a position where we're one of those up and coming teams. And like, what was interesting to me is even in the losing streak, the national like conversation around the Cavs was, oh yeah, they're going to figure it out. Like all the mm-hmm. advanced numbers are good.
The conversation was like that in my mentions. My God.
Look, we have some hurt to work through, Carter, myself included. When things go rough, like it weighs on you, especially when everyone's staying up late for losses. That just makes everyone an extra little bit of grumpy. But like, there's just confidence inside and outside of the fan base that this team is legitimate and this team's going to be good for a lot of years. And I'm so thankful, and it still feels surreal that this is the point that we're at with this team.
Oh yeah, man. Go Cavs.
Go Cavs. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I agree. Go Cavs.
Very well said. And honestly, I think before we wrap this up, I'm going to jump on my soapbox here. And I got to say, I'm very thankful for our listeners as well. You guys have been absolutely incredible. It's unreal that we've had the support that we've had over the last couple of years. And it really, really does mean a lot, whether it's debating us in our Twitter mentions, in the Discord, or whatever. I honestly feel like the conversations we have with our listeners make me a better podcast host and help me kind of view things from other angles. So I'm really appreciative for our listeners, and I'm really appreciative of the Cavs as well for giving us this platform. Like, we're not out here trying to be insiders or act like we know the most. We just kind of have our conversations and hope that it's insightful, and hopefully you guys learn along with us. And that's just like, it's such a unique thing, and it's really cool that the Cavs have embraced it to the extent that they've have and all the support they give. It's not something I take for granted. I'm really thankful for this platform. It's silly, yes, but I'm thankful for it.
Yes, sir. Shouts to Brandon, Gold, Madison, Jonathan, the whole gang over at the Cavs that take very, very good care of us. And again, thank you to our listeners. Very thankful for y'all. One of my favorite things to do is, you know, when I see a review that says like, I listen every time on my commute to work every day, like the idea that like we're part of someone's routine is like, for whatever reason, that's like the coolest thing to me. You know, that this is something that people look forward to and it helps them get through, you know, a crappy drive to work or whatever it might be. And so it's really a blessing to get to do this, and appreciate everyone.
Yeah. And if you guys are listening to this as you're either commuting to or commuting from your Thanksgiving things, safe travels to you all. We really do appreciate it. And yeah, as Carter said, thank you so much for making us part of your routine. And if you're thinking, hey, I'm thankful for these guys too, and I want to support them. Wow. The best way to do that, if you're watching on YouTube, is like, subscribe, click notification bell. If you're listening via the podcast, leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, yo Cavs.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring? but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You ever get that feeling like the concrete jungle's closing in? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to chase your own dinner, or just breathe clean air. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there waiting, and finding your piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, price, location. They've got it all. No matter what kind of wild dream you're chasing, land.com can help you find the ground to make it a reality. So quit dreaming. Head over to land.com, find your open space, and get out there.